Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out. We are thrilled to welcome the former national team member, Stanford alum, and former Stanford coach winning one national championship in her one season coaching at Stanford, Cassidy Lichtman. Thanks for joining us, Cass.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm excited to be here.
Good to see you again.
You too.
Hear you. All of the above. John, take it away, buddy.
How did Andrew do on the intro? What did you think? Any feedback?
He did great. It felt like some good energy there.
Yeah.
From the heart.
It was definitely better than I would have done. I'm glad you did, Andrew. So, yeah, we want to start out just understanding your nonprofit. It's P/ATH, PATH, I'm assuming is how you say it. Can you tell us a little bit about that endeavor?
Yeah, it's called PATH. You can find it at pathsports.org. And it really started with the idea that I felt like as an athlete, I've always had two jobs. One is to, you know, bring my best, and the other is to help the person next to me bring theirs. And I felt like that would also be great if applied to just everybody in the world at whatever they're doing. And so, you know, those skills don't have that much to do with how we hit the ball. It has a lot more to do with kind of how we operate as human beings. And so if I'm trying to bring my best, I have to understand kind of my own identity, myself, my mindset, and to help the person next to me do theirs, I have to understand who they are, where they come from, and have some empathy and ability to communicate with them. And so what we do is create kind of short form content featuring elite athletes and coaches, you know, names that we've all watched, you know, growing up, Steve Kerr and Apollo Ono and Julie Foudy, and just greats from across sports, using their own kind of voice and experiences to break down those lessons and really kind of human skills around empathy, equity, and empowerment, so that we can teach them to the next generation, and then giving kind of actionable ways to practice those skills. So, you know, our target audience is the kids, but we're really trying to be also a resource for coaches and teachers to just take, you know, a few minutes out of their training time to work on, you know, kind of the more human skills that we all say that sports teach, that are going to be really impactful for those kids once they grow up, whether or not they become, you know, professional athletes. So like I said, pathsports.org, and we have some great content up there that's being used already by, you know, coaches and teachers from middle school all the way up through college across the country.
Now I've got my curriculum for the whole year, Cass.
That's it. We have it all for you.
Boom. So that's a nice segue into our topic about being a well-rounded player. And, you know, you're talking about being a well-rounded person, and, you know, being a solid person is part of being a well-rounded player. But you're someone who's played just about every position in volleyball, even at the national team level, at the highest level of the sport. What do you think led to that skill set of being able to do so many different things on the court?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that led to it was my mom. You know, she's a volleyball coach.
We all just need your mom.
Yeah, you all just need to use my mom when you're little. But it was her knowing, she knew for my brother and for me, you know, my brother's 6'8" now. I'm 6 feet tall, which is, you know, tall in the normal world, not that tall in volleyball. But she knew we were going to be tall growing up. And so everybody was like, why aren't you just making them hitters? Because she kept teaching us how to set and pass when we were younger. And she's like, anybody can hit. You know, you can always learn how to hit later, but not everybody's going to learn how to pass and set. And so I think that was part of it, just not assuming, you know, my future position based on what my body was going to be like, but how do we learn kind of the fundamental skills at a young age was the first thing. I was also lucky that I think I was smaller when I was younger, and then grew and then got smaller again when I went to Stanford, and everybody else was like 6'5". So I had to have some of those kind of smaller player skills, and then developed as a hitter a little bit later, kind of going into high school. So I think that those were parts of it. And then, you know, just when I was probably like my very first team, my 12s team, we played the 6'6" offense where you right front sets and everybody rotates around. And I loved that because I got to do everything. And then as we went on, I became a DS and then a setter and then a hitter and then a setter again. And then even going through high school, once everybody wanted me to hit, we were really cognizant of, okay, that's great, but I still want to work on these other skills and make sure that I'm, you know, getting my reps setting, even if that's outside of practice, so that I have some options once those other people start to get a lot bigger around me.
And what positions did you play in your pro season this last year?
I played outside hitter, but I did set occasionally when we took, when we had like a blocking sub or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So if you're the, say the czar of juniors volleyball, would you like, what age would you implement that six or the rotation where like right front sets, the, the six person rotation, what age would you want to like put that up to?
I mean, I would love if they did it to 12s. There's a part of me that loves seeing 11 year olds out there, like running a 6'2" and because it's, because it looks like real volleyball. So part of me likes that they're doing that and they're getting used to that, you know, movement on the court. But, you know, having gone through the process that I did, I feel like it's so beneficial to not kind of pigeonhole kids. Cause you watch, you know, even at that age, kids who never play back row, you know, the tall kids who are like, hey, you're a middle or an opposite, and they're just not learning the other skills. And so if you have a coach who uses practice time to teach everybody everything and then goes into matches and plays, you know, a 6'2" or 5'1" or whatever, then okay, like great. But I think a lot of the times, even at that kind of 11 and 12 year old age groups, there's coaches who, you know, in practice, you're only hitting in the middle, you're only hitting the right. And I think that does a disservice to those kids.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that seems like the trend now is that you specialize pretty young and you've got your specific position and you covered some of the negatives. Do you see any benefits of that system?
Yeah. I mean, kids get good at doing what they do, I guess. It's going, and it's going to serve some kids well, the kids who do end up in that position, who have played it for a long time. You know, it's going to show potentially some benefits for them. And then there's others that are going to drop off because they were deemed a middle at 12 years old and they end up being 5'8". So it just depends on which kid you are. So yeah, it could pay off for some of them. But I also think that like being able to just understand the all around game and think in that way, kind of globally about it or holistically about it is important. And there are kids who just, they literally, they know where to stand on the court because they've been told that's where they stand. They know that's where their rotation is. They are in that rotation and they hit this ball and it's a lot more kind of mechanical as opposed to understanding like the flow of the game and how all of those pieces work together.
Yeah. So I could see how it helped you throughout your career, but do you feel like it ever held you back? Like not specializing and playing lots of positions?
I did a little bit. Well, I did kind of feel like it potentially was when I was in college. I mean, most of the time we're talking about whether or not kids are going to specialize by the time they're, you know, 16 and I was 20 or 25, like, and also I still haven't figured it out. So I think, you know, in college, my freshman year, I was a DS for the most part, at least in matches. And then my sophomore year, I set, and we ran a 6'2" for the first part of the season and then a 5'1". And so at the end of the season, I was excited for the next season. I was like, I'm setting a 5'1" now for basically the first time in my life. We just went to the national championship. I just kind of felt like I hit my groove and figured it out. And then realized I was going to need to hit outside the next season. And I still set some, but it's not the same thing. And so it was at that point where I was kind of like, man, if I just stayed setting, would I be better at it? If I just was hitting, would I be better at it? And it took so much time and effort to kind of get the reps and all of those things. And I always felt like I was not quite getting enough in any one thing. So I think you could say that maybe I would have been better at, you know, one of them if I had just done it. I also maybe I wouldn't have made the national team at all, because part of the reason I made it was because I always say like I snuck into the national team gym in the summer of 2012 in Olympic year when nobody really joins. Cause Hugh just let me in the gym cause they needed a body in the very beginning. And he was like, then you're going to leave probably when everybody comes back from overseas. And so I was setting and the setters came back and then he's like, well, can you play right side? Cause the right sides aren't back yet. And so I did that. And then the right sides came back. He said, can you play outside? And I said, yeah. And then the outside. And then I was like libero for a couple weeks. And all of a sudden I had stayed in the gym the whole summer and went to the Pan Am Cup and was like a full member of the national team the next year without ever really like trying out. And so maybe I would have made it as a setter, you know, just a strict pure setter. Maybe I would have made it a strictly pure outside hitter, but the way that I got into the national team gym was by being the person who could do anything they needed.
Cass, you're making a pretty strong case for not specializing. When do you think young athletes should, if ever, specialize in a sport? Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think high school is a reasonable time. I mean, I would still like my players to have other skills. Like, I would love my middles to be able to, you know, handle the ball, or my opposites or whatever it is. But I think that once you get to high school, you can start to kind of define the player that you're going to be. And occasionally there's players like me who you go, okay, you're going to be a setter hitter. And that's the role that you're going to play. But I think that's okay. And also just at the kind of multi-sport level, you know, I think high school is a good time to go, okay, maybe volleyball is my thing. Or at least, you know, outside of school, like I played high school softball, but I was very clear with the coach, like volleyball is my sport. So that's going to take priority. So I think at the high school level, it's okay to start, you know, defining what you're going to do.
Yeah. Cass, you mentioned that one of the most important things to you is to bring out the best in the people around you. And, you know, that I think that's been like a long-term thing for you. So you've probably had a lot of time to mull over the key components of that. What would you say, you know, if you're urging someone else to do that and trying to give them some keys for bringing out the best around those people around them, what would you say those keys are for you?
I think one of the biggest is understanding that everybody needs something different. And so the first thing you do as a teammate is go, okay, how can I understand the people around me? And like I said, where they're coming from and what they need. So I've had teammates who, when I'm on the court with them, they really need like direct information, you know, what's coming at me in the next play. And I've had teammates who they really need to feel like trust, like eye contact, you know, let's like be in this moment together. And some who need me to like make a joke and lighten the mood for them because they get stressed. And so I think figuring out what that is for each teammate. And if you don't know, just ask. Like we went through a whole process in the national team with Mike Gervais, our sports psychologist, where he said, okay, we're going to take a list of all of your teammates and you write down what you think they need in difficult moments, you know, in good moments, whatever it is. And then you're going to go around and ask them what they need and see if it matches up. And some people were good at that exercise and some people were really not. And it was kind of mind blowing to just watch, you know, people who play together every day have conversations that was like brand new information to them about what the person next to them really wanted or was thinking about when they were on the court. And so I think that's the first step to it is just going, okay, what's their kind of mindset and what helps me may not be what helps them. And so I can be me and be consistent across my interactions, but tweak it for the person and what's going to help kind of bring the best out of them.
I love that. And it's so important to know yourself too.
Yeah. And kind of have control and awareness of yourself. Cause if you can't help the person next to, it's like, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself first, right? Like if you're freaking out, you're not going to be much help to the person next to you. So you got to take care of that stuff first.
Well, give us the 10-second version of what helps you when the crap hits the fan. We'll breathing. See if you really know yourself here, Cass.
Yeah. I say, I just, you know, take a breath. I take whatever happened in the last play. I take like the information. So what did I do wrong? And then any emotion that might be helpful. Like sometimes I play better if I'm a little bit angry. But any emotion that's kind of not helpful, just like, we're just going to put that away and go into the next play.
Yeah.
What'd you do to discover that?
I mean, I think part of it's a little bit of it is just my personality. Like I'm a fairly calm person in general, not like super emotionally volatile. And then one of the things that I distinctly remember making a decision on was I was probably 14 and I watched, it's around the time that like big blockers become bigger. And I was at a tournament and I watched a girl just get roofed. And you could see it on her, like just, you know, the slumping of the shoulders, walking back, she's upset. And I watched kind of that momentum shift or energy shift in that game. And I looked at it and I was like, I don't want to do that. And so I've always felt like if I'm competing, the game that I'm playing, there's two points available. One is, you know, did I get blocked or did I get a kill? And they block me, they win that point. The second point that's available is, did I walk back to my spot, shoulders back, ask for the next ball and move on well, or did I not? If they can see it, if they know they affected me, then I lose the point. And so that always seemed to me like, you know, the best way to play the game and really compete is not, you know, be the angriest or the most upset when you make errors, whatever, but can you play the game within the points and not start and stop as the whistle blows? So in any game that I'm in, I'm trying to play that whole, 2 hours or whatever it is and beat them at the game that they're not even aware that we're playing.
Yeah, that's awesome. So then what do you do? You're trying to be a great teammate, but let's say there's someone you just don't get along with, or just don't see eye to eye with, or just not the sort of personality that you mesh with. Like, what do you do in those situations to still get the best out of someone?
John, can you not bring our relationship
into the conversation? Yeah, so you got a taste of me and Andrew pre-show. So yeah, help us.
Yeah, I got you. I try to just kind of focus on the common ground, which is like we both want to win. And so I've definitely had teammates like that. Like, one of the people I warmed up with every day in high school, like we weren't good friends and we both were there for the same reason and we both wanted to win. And I think we had a kind of a rule at Stanford where it was like, anything that somebody else does that does not negatively affect the team, you just accept that about them. And so, if the problem is you were out partying last night and you showed up to weights late and hungover and like you, whatever, and you couldn't lift, that's going to negatively affect the team. And so we're going to need to have a talk about that. If you just went to the party and I didn't want to, or I didn't really like your boyfriend or like whatever, then we're just going to accept that we're different people and you do you and I do me. And I think that was a really kind of healthy rule to go, we're all going to be different. We're not going to be see eye to eye on stuff. But as long as, within this sphere, we're all trying to accomplish the same goal, then cool. Like, do what you're going to do. And then I think the other rule that we had on the national team was just assume best intent, mm-hmm. which I think is a huge thing. It's just like, there's all these kind of stories that you can make up in your head about another person and why they're doing the things they're doing. And so where we always wanted to start was, can we assume that we all have, the best intent in mind and look at things from that kind of lens? And the flip side of that is that means everybody on the team needs to have the best intent, because otherwise mm-hmm. it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, that's great. So then being a great teammate, it's a important skill to develop, but I think coaches spend more time maybe developing passing, serving, setting these other skills. So what can they do to be training, this skill of being a teammate who gets the best out of the people around them?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is just recognizing it, when it happens or when it doesn't. So in the same way that you're praising or critiquing, passing form, can you praise or critique, how somebody's interacting with somebody else? And so like one of the things we did when I was coaching at Stanford, after each week we had a jar that we would fill with marbles. So if a teammate or a coach could recognize somebody for something they did well that week. So somebody makes a great play, they have a career hitting night, whatever, you can put a marble in the jar. And the point is, the end of the season, you're supposed to have a jar full of marbles. And I think, every week there were marbles being put in for the bench and what they were doing. And and it was honestly like a storyline when we got to the Final Four was how amazing our bench was. They were so engaged, and not just in games, but in practice every day. And we talked about it all the time, how great they were. We talked about it, them in practice and how they were focused and how they were helping each other, just amongst our team and in those kinds of settings where, they're getting credit for it. And so I think that's a big thing. Like if you're saying it's important, then you need to recognize when it's happening, or address it when it's not. And so I think that's, the biggest part of it.
And Cass, you didn't mention that we should just go to pathsports.org.
That's the other thing. Coaches, you can go to Path Sports and learn how to teach these skills. I mean, but honestly though, like what we've tried to do is go, okay, well, lots of coaches aren't trained in teaching these skills. And so we just want to make it really easy for you. So like, you don't necessarily have to know what to say, because Steve Kerr is going to say it for you. And all you have to do is press play, and there's some questions you can ask and you can have a quick conversation about it. And it'll take 10 minutes out of your time. And I think spending 10 minutes on how to be a better teammate or how to be a better leader is like a pretty good use of time.
Totally. Totally. Making it really palatable and simple to insert into practice is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Cass, you played for some pretty legendary coaches, John and Denise and Karch and your mom. Don't forget your mom. What role did they play? I'm sure each of them had a different kind of role, and you being a well-rounded game as a teammate, as a competitor, as, you know, from a skill standpoint, what role did they play in that?
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about my mom. So she gets the news for when I was young. And my club coaches for, I think, really just using me to win, like teaching me that that was the most important thing was winning and not, you know, which position I was playing on the court. And so I always did what they asked me to do and what was going to help us. And everybody always asked me throughout my whole career what my favorite position was. And I was like, listen, I want to do two things. I want to win and I want to play. And, you know, whatever is going to help both of those things happen, I'm in. John, I think it would have been really easy for him to try to put me into a box. And, you know, I'm sure like everybody, I had certain labels about me that I was like the smart player and the, you know, the kind of ambiguous position kid and like all of these different things. And it would have been easy for him to go, okay, you're going to be a setter and this is what we're going to do with you. And I think to his credit, he's a kind of coach who really looks at his personnel and says, how can I maximize these people? And not everybody's like that. You know, some people, and I, for better or for worse, you know, some people have their system and they get the people who are going to fit in that system. And that makes a lot of sense. But I thought that was something he was really good at, was going, okay, who do I have and how can I best use them? And so he didn't try to fit me into that box and allowed me to use the kind of various talents I had to help in different ways when we needed them. And so every season my role was going to change and I had to be okay with that. But he also had to be okay with letting me evolve as a player as I went through his program.
That's cool. I think you probably just said it, but would you add anything to just general advice that you would give for coaches? Because you've been at the highest level on both ends. And I not only have you done both, but I think you understand the dynamic between the two really well. And I'm sure people would be clamoring to know kind of like just your general advice for coaches, if you have any.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think from both John and Karch, they both really invited conversation. Like I'm the kind of player, and maybe not everybody is, but I think a lot of people are, like, I am going to be better if I understand why I'm doing things, you know, the way I'm doing them or the way you're asking me to do them. And so both of them, you know, not only allowed, but really encouraged me to ask questions and to come in and talk about the things that we were doing. And, you know, for John, I think what I learned in talking to him about all that stuff is how important it is to have a reason for the things, for why you're doing things the way that you are. Like the things that kills me the most about coaches is if they're like, this is what you're going to do. Like they kind of lay down the law and they don't have a reason for it. Like that's the point as a player where I'm out. I don't trust you as a coach. And so in the course of that, like there are times when John and I might disagree, but I always understood. I always had that trust that he had a reason for it. And I could come in and ask him about it and we could talk it through. And if it turned out that, you know, I had an argument that you know, respectfully changed his mind, then we could have that conversation. But it's, I think, really freeing as a player to go, okay, you're doing this not just because this is the way it's always been done or whatever, but you really thought this through, like you put the work into it. So I think that was super helpful. And then Karch, I mean, I talk about this a lot, but he, day one, when Karch took over the national team, you know, the first day of his quad in 2013, he came in and he said, the rule number one of our gym is we are all learners. And he would always say, we're all learners starting with me. And that's such a huge statement coming from Karch Kurai, who is the best volleyball player in the history of the world, to say that. And he didn't just talk the talk, like he walked the walk. When I would have meetings with him, we would be talking about, you know, me and what I need to work on. And he would always end with, okay, and what can I do better? And sometimes I'd be like, listen, Karch, you're doing great. Like yeah, everything's fine. But sometimes I'd have something like, hey, if we frame this drill a little bit differently, or if we did this, or I've been thinking about this, and, you know, next day he'd change it. And so I think modeling that behavior was super important and set the tone for that gym in a lot of ways. and is such just an incredible mindset for life in terms of just being a learner at any stage. And to sort of kind of draw from both of those things, the biggest thing for me when I think about coaches is, I think every problem that I've ever had with a coach comes from either arrogance or insecurity, right? Which are kind of two sides of the same coin. Like either they're like, this is the way to do it, and I know everything, or they're worried that they don't. And either way, I think those are the things that kind of beget problems. Rather than being kind of collaborative the way that those two guys were, and allowing for discussion, but having the confidence in your vision to say, you know, this is what I think, and let's talk about it. And if we come up with something better, that's great.
That's cool. Examples, what you said about John Dunning, about how he, you trusted him, and it seems like trust is such an important component, but any examples of how he built that trust? Like how did he build that between you and him?
Yeah. I mean, I was super nervous the first time I walked in there, like called my own meeting with John. I was super nervous. John Dunning, like I'm 19 years old or something. I was scared. And so a lot of it was just kind of, I was becoming a setter. And so just having a lot of conversations about volleyball, and then being able, like I had coaches before that who did not want feedback or critique or anything like that. And so, you know, as I kind of tentatively started asking questions, just him being open to that and being like, okay, let's talk about this and let's talk through it. And the more he did that, the more I understood that was allowed and encouraged. And so I think that was just the biggest thing, was just kind of projecting that openness and without wavering in his kind of authority. Like it was always very clear between us, like whatever your end decision is, I'm going to respect that and try to perform it to the best of my ability. But the ability to kind of walk in there and have those conversations and not get that kind of defensiveness that you can feel from coaches, I think that was the biggest thing. Like when somebody asks you a question, it's not you're questioning them. It's just that they want to know. Or if you treat it like that, then I think it doesn't become an antagonistic relationship. It's just like, okay, let's again be kind of collaborative about this.
Cass, you touched on it, that part of the reason that, you know, you felt comfortable with whatever role you had was that you had a good reason for it. And was wondering, you know, so when people play different positions, some players moving positions, whether it's an indoor and you're moving from like top outside to second outside, or you know, you're moving from libero to DS, or some players view moving positions as a negative or as a demotion. And was there anything else that your coaches have done to help you buy into the changing roles? And, you know, I think indoor coaches have certain struggles with this. And then for beach coaches, sometimes, you know, someone's just going to be better at maybe a different flight, mm-hmm. or with a slightly different partner. Mm-hmm. That's a weird way of putting it. Just a different partner. And how have people or coaches helped you buy into those changing roles, other than like giving just, you know, kind of the cookie cutter reason for it?
Yeah. I mean, everybody wants to be valued, you know? And so I think that's the biggest thing. To start with, like, do you value everybody on your team? Do you treat them all well, so that if somebody is moving position to position, are they going to be treated the same way? You know, like if they're going to the bench, are they going to be treated like a bench player? Are they not? Are they going to be, you know, are you playing favorites? That kind of thing. I think it gets sticky. And then, you know, not only like the reason for why you're doing it, but how it's maximizing your impact. You know, if you're losing matches at the number two team, but you can help win matches at the number three team, like you're helping the team in a much larger way. And so, you know, trying to explain things in ways that are like, you know, hey, you're moving to the second outside spot because you're a great passer, and maybe you're not as terminal as the other outside hitter, but this is the way that you're going to help, because if you pass great, then we can set our middle. And so, you know, for me, like when I was in a 6-2, in the beginning of my sophomore year, I was like, why am I here? We can set Feluca. Like, why should I be hitting right now? Why should anybody else be hitting except for Feluca? Like, I'm just in her way. And so like, how do you put me in a place that's gonna help me maximize that my value and her maximize hers. But that first point about valuing everybody, I think is really important, and one that we, I think, was a really big part of that national championship run we had at Stanford. And I've heard John talk about this, that, you know, we really focused a lot on that bench side of the court and kept them engaged. And I think that's a lot of what kept our starters engaged, and, you know, those freshmen kind of happy in their first year. But it was the fact that in any given practice, you know, we're looking at both sides of the court and we're coaching everybody, and we're recognizing everybody's efforts. And I think that's the first thing, is if your team has levels to it, everybody's going to feel it.
Yeah, I think it just seems like the feeling valued, the way you started, it's just right on. Because like you said, people on the bench, you can feel valued even if you're not on the court, right? If the coach spends time helping you grow and showing that they care for you. So
exactly.
That's a great message.